Hello from beyond the estuary. Another week of lockdown. This is my seventh podcast, but I think I must be going to about 8 weeks of lockdown now. And although things are starting to look a bit easier, they say, I think it'll be a while yet before we can go back to doing the normal things that we've been doing. I must admit I look forward to these podcasts, a bit more time to talk about poetry. And this week I'd like to talk a little bit more about eco-poetics. I did raise that last week and needed to have a little bit of a think and do a bit of research on what eco-poetry actually was. But before I do that, I just wanted to tell you some good news. I've had a poem shortlisted for the Ada Cambridge Poetry Prize. And it was that poem, Survivor, that I read in podcast 4, if you want to go back and check that. And also a really nice thing was that my friend Yvonne Adami, she also had a poem shortlisted in the Ada Cambridge Prize. And I'd like to read that for you now. I call that a nature poem, I think. Yvonne Adami had her first chapbook published with Melbourne Poets Union in 2017, and that was called Tidal. She writes a lot about the environment and about nature. This poem is called Barwon Morning. Barwon morning gathers at the edge of the river, drifts in water light, wanders scrubland of moona trees, drenched in colours of the sun, watches a lone gull on the shoreline, staring out to sea, to sky, the stillness. I wish you could see that poem on the page because it's not doesn't line up as a lot of regular lines. It sort of meanders across the page backwards and forwards, and a bit like the morning light would touch different parts of the landscape as it moves. That's a beautiful poem. So this sort of leads me to talk about eco-poetry, and in trying to sort of understand myself what eco-poetry was, I found during the week a discussion between poet Anne Elby and Philip Hall on the difference between nature poetry and eco-poetry, and some of the poets that write in those particular styles. I mentioned Anne Elby, I think, a couple of weeks ago. She is very much an eco-poet. She runs a magazine called Plumwood Mountain, which is dedicated directly to eco-poetics. And interesting, some of the things that they were saying about the difference between nature poetry and eco-poetry. Nature poetry is more in sort of praise of nature itself. It's a celebration of the natural world, and suggested perhaps it's a more passive sort of a way of describing nature. Feel-good sort of poems about nature, romanticising of nature perhaps. And they mentioned another local poet, Diane Fay, who writes that sort of nature poetry. Now, eco-poetics is a bit different. It's more activist, really. It's a more of an interrogation of nature, and its purpose is to really engage with nature in poetry writing to change the world, really. The discussion between Anne Elby and Philip Hall. Now, Philip Hall is also a poet. He's written, I'll read some of his poems too. He lives in Sunshine in Melbourne at the moment. I think he's had 4 publications published, and his Indigenous background. And he also, I think he lived in the Gulf of Carpentaria for a while, and a lot of his poetry is centred there. But he made an interesting statement. He says that the idea that wilderness, sort of the celebration of wilderness, is actually a racist concept. And I suppose that idea really of same idea as terra nullius, the sort of unspoiled natural country. When you think about it, it is a bit of a racist concept. I suppose a bit like the concept of the noble savage is also a racist concept. They did say, though, that, you know, although those two types of nature writing are different, but the lines cross over all the time, of course. You can't, one's not totally separate from another. So I'd like to just read a couple of Anne Elvey's poems first, and then one of Philip Hall's. And Anne does write a lot about the natural world, but with that sort of edge of perhaps more of an activist edge. And this first poem is called Banksia integrifolia. Stenciled and still, coast banksias, ubiquitous in your suburb, are ogreish in their sculpting, with no impulse towards symmetry. They undermine your streetscape, where this asymmetry of gums is elegant on the whole. A banksia bristles. It will not say, consider yourself at home. So she sort of moves more past just admiration and celebration of the beauty. It's just something else about nature, I think. And her second poem, which is also about trees, is called Paperbark Ash Grove. Dense with tenderness, your layered skin is ragged as if torn by ancestral scribe, and laid tuck against trunk, the innocent flesh shed and held. Like a word you might say about yourself, as wind breathes against your weeping delicate leaves that eat the light. Your body drinks, and deep inside remakes the soil and sun. So two crows call that you have called them here, and your wood's joy at their impertinence erupts in peals of flesh. Is it strip me, you say? Or do colonial eyes see paper where flesh is? Did your shedding call older hands to ochre? What is this breath that lifts like a curtain your lanceolate leaves, where each one's caress pierces the space it defines? So I suppose there she's asking questions really about it's not just the beauty of a tree, but she's sort of linking it with a colonial understanding versus an indigenous understanding. Now that word lanceolate, I had to actually check myself, which is lanceolate leaves, leaves a shape like the edge of a lance or a spear. Moving on to Philip Hall, I said has written, I think, quite a bit about the Gulf of Carpentaria too. I haven't seen any of those poems. But he's written this poem called Save Bahana Gorge. To town planners, the granite gorge traces like a wound across the scythe and hothouse landscape, its water a sprawling spray storm in the wet, spitting and exposing steep barriers to advancement. Against the creek's current, tadpoles attach head first to rocks, while on the banks burrowing frogs chorus in the leaf litter, and leeches stand erect on their sucker rear ends, longing for blood. Sometimes we see a cormorant or a heron, or the hill hear the shrill staccato notes of a whistling kite circling treetops. You watch catfish guarding nests of stones as water rats slip through a strainer of flood debris. People come here to swim or spray graffiti. Sometimes, though, when I spend time in the gorge, all I hear is the zeroing in the mozzies. All I see is the spray of the torrent as I wait for curlew to call their drawn-out wailing, "We're here!" Often I'll just stare into the canopy as dragonflies manoeuvre their fabulous films in the flickering light, or I watch the orb spider strung golden between trees and spotted with silver dew, or follow the line of swimming holes, lichen, fungus and fern, now proposed as a pipeline by the Cairns Water Corporation. Well, what you thought might be just a admiration of nature changes totally in that last line, doesn't it? That nature and that whole area proposed as a pipeline by the Cairns Water Corporation, which I guess turns that poem into a eco poem rather than just a straight out admiration of nature. Now I'm going to finish today with one of my own poems, which I think is an eco poem, even though I didn't know that when I wrote it. It's taken from my first collection, The Arms of Men. And this poem is, it's a little bit similar to that last poem of Philip Hall's. It's called Once. Micturis longicapi in blue jackets burrowed into mudflats where Netichidiae drilled into sea snail shells dining on soft flesh, where timid prawns shivered in mangrove swamps. Now, the eastern curlew flies 10,000 k's to find ocean view, location and lifestyle opportunity, where dust flies up from trucks of ready-mixed concrete. No job too big. Curlews circling. I guess it picks up on that same idea of beautiful landscape possibly destroyed by overdevelopment. And that does fit neatly into the idea of eco-poetry. So I hope you've enjoyed this little exploration into eco-poetry today. And thank you for all the comments that you've been putting on the podcast page. Please keep them coming. And I'm happy to announce that next week, another poet friend of mine has actually sent in a little audio tape of a poet that she likes to talk about. So I'll be playing that next week. And I'd like to encourage anybody who might have the idea that they'd like to send in an audio tape, I'd be happy to hear that and make it part of my podcasting. Also look out for, if you're looking at more for more poets in the eco-poetic vein, look out for the American poet Jonathan Skinner, who writes pretty much all eco-poetry, and he was a former professor of environmental studies. So thanks again for listening, a bit longer today, getting into eco-poetry and exploring that, and keep your comments and contributions coming, and hopefully I'll talk to you again next week. Thank you.